जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरीवरधारी यशोदाय नंदन व्रज जन रंजन यमुना तीरा वनचारी जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी प्रभुपाद 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 जय प्रभुपाद जय जय गुरुदेव 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 जय गुरुदेव जय निधाय गौर प्रेमानंदे जय ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतम की ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 1 चैप्टर 7 टेक्स्ट 56 57 एंड 58 विमुच्य रसनाबद्धम् बालहत्याहत प्रभम् तेजसामनिनाहीनम् शिबिरान्निरयापयत् विमुच्य रसनाबद्धम् बालहत्याहत प्रभम् तेजसामनिनाहीनम् शिबिरान्निरयापयत् विमुच्य रसनाबद्धम् बालहत्याहत प्रभम् तेजसामनिनाहीनम् शिबिरान्निरयापयत् What to word meaning? Vimuchya. After releasing him. Rasana Baddham. From the bondage of ropes. Balahatya. Infanticide. Hataprabham. Loss of bodily luster. Tejasa. Of the strength of. Manina. By the jewel. Heenam. Being deprived of Shibirat from the camp. Niraya Payat drove him out. Translation by His Divine Grace Srila Isi Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. He, Ashwatthama, had already lost his bodily luster due to infanticide and now, moreover, having lost the jewel from his head, he lost even more strength. Thus, he was unbound and driven out of the camp. Purport. Thus, being insulted, the humiliated Ashwatthama was simultaneously killed and not killed by the intelligence of Lord Krishna and Arjuna. Since there are no purports in the further two verses, and the chapter ends there, we'll take those two verses also. Text 57. Cutting the hair from his head, depriving him of his wealth and driving him from his residence are the prescribed punishments for the relative of a Brahmana. There is no injunction for killing the body. Text 58. Thereafter, the sons of Pandu and Draupadi, overwhelmed with grief, performed the proper rituals for the dead bodies of their relatives. Om Ajnanatimirandasya Jnananjanashalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Dadamayam Dadati Svaparantikam Nama Om Vishnuparaya Krishna Preshthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavari Paschatya Deshatarine Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityayananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. So we welcome all of you to another day. Actually, it's not another day. It's a very special day of Srimad Bhagavatam class to everyone present here and everyone listening online. And seek the blessings of Gurudev and all the assembled Vaishnavas, senior devotees, especially like Gauranga Prabhu, so that I may speak something for my purification, and if there is something inspiring, it will be my good fortune for all of you. Hare Krishna. So, these are the last three verses of this chapter. The son of Drona punished. So, basically, it will be like more of a summary of the entire chapter today. And so many speakers have over the past few days and last months presented this chapter very nicely, and so many lessons and qualities and features have been highlighted from this particular chapter. So we'll go back to 2012, one time in Florida. There was a school and two kids were kind of just having their daily routine in the school. And then what is America famous for, apart from the industrialization and the topmost superpower in the world? It's also famous for something else that we might not be kind of hearing much in the news. So one day, these two kids were standing outside the school and they had a small tiff and the argument built. And then what was all about? A petty issue like someone playing a loud music. So at the end of the day, what happened? One kid shot another kid. And then basically, okay, we say the Indian trials are not that good. But then in 2014, it took 2 years for this guy also to be convicted. In 2014, Louis, this guy who was kind of murdered, was convicted. And then the mother and father of the victim were kind of called to the court. So there is some kind of provision. And then at that particular time, what the mother said in the law of justice, in the court of justice, was something really worthwhile. This is 2014, many years ago. And then she said, "All my life, Your Honor, all my life I had been teaching my son the virtue of forgiveness. All my life I had been teaching him the virtue of kindness. And then how can I, after teaching him the entire lifetime I have kind of dedicated in teaching my son this virtue of forgiveness, how can I not practice what I have kind of spoken to him throughout his lifetime?" And the mother forgives the killer of her son. Again, a few years later in Iran, now from the kind of West Christian country, we're coming to a Muslim country, Iran. A few years back again, the same instance happens. Two young men are friends, and then in a frenzy, one person kills another friend. then the Sharia court of law, this person was also caught. And then, according to the Sharia court of law, there is a provision in their law wherein the relatives or the kin of the, the actual people who are related to the victim, they are given a chance to actually partake in the punishment or justice that is awarded to the victim or to the person who committed the crime. So a noose is tied around this criminal. He is placed on a chair or he's standing, basically what we kind of see in cliché films or whatever at one point of time we had seen. So, but then the difference is the mother and the father actually come and the mother is supposed to shove that chair through which the person falls down and he's kind of dead. And the actual pictures are there on the, if you Google, you'll find this story, it was really heartening or what to say, I don't know what adjectives to use. The mother comes, she's completely crying, broken, crestfallen. And then she gives one tight slap to this person who's kind of completely covered his head and she breaks down, collapses. The father completely unties the noose of this criminal and then another picture which follows, the mother of the person who killed the son, the criminal's mother and the victim's mother, they both burst out crying completely. That's the kind of picture this story culminates in. So again, basically this is the quality that we'll choose to focus to discuss for the next half an hour or more in this discussion today. So Radhesham Prabhu had in the Vidyapeeth classes touched upon these verses and this chapter. So before kind of progressing to this, discussing this quality in detail, I just like a couple of salient features from the entire chapter since this is more like a summary of this chapter. So at one point of time in this chapter, Ashwatthama, he had killed and committed the heinous crime of killing the 5 sons of Draupadi. And then Arjuna gives hot pursuit to Ashwatthama. Finally, he is kind of caught, tied, bounded with ropes. Krishna at that time comes and tells Ashwatthama, comes and tells Arjuna, that what are you doing? Kill him. You have promised Draupadi that you will bring him his head. And then Arjuna, like a very obedient disciple, he doesn't say no. He doesn't refuse. What does he do? That's the kind of first feature that was kind of mentioned. And it is something like a good disciple is one who will understand the heart of his spiritual master or the heart of his authority or superiors. So Arjuna here, although Krishna was actually telling him, kill him, but Arjuna didn't kind of commit the act immediately. If he wanted, he was in every right of his, he was getting instructions from Krishna to really behead Ashwatthama then and there. But then Arjuna understood the heart of Krishna. He understood Krishna is just teasing me right here. And then what follows is basically, we all know he takes him to Draupadi. So in this particular aspect, there was a story narrated by Jayadvait Maharaj that how it pays to basically understand the heart and mind of people you are kind of interacting with on a daily basis. So at one point of time, it could be kind of a mundane story or something, but then at one point of time, a customer walks in to buy Kanchivaram saris in a shop. The price of one sari may be, 20,000 rupees. They want to buy 20 saris for a marriage party. And then they actually realize we don't have any saris in our stock. So then what happens? I have also come from that background. So if somebody comes to your shop and you don't have, so at the same time, if you're intelligent, you'll just look at your guy and say, okay, aankho hi aankho mein ishara ho jata hai. That's kind of more than sufficient. Can you get that? So that's sufficient. He'll go to the godown. Basically, there is no godown. So he'll go to the adjacent shops, immediately pick up the market of automobiles. Also, you have automobiles next door, the market of saris. You have saris next door. So basically, the brother of this owner of the shop, he just receives that one line from the owner. He decodes the sutra in basically a big purport. He goes to the adjacent shop, picks up 40 saris of Kanchipuram, brings it, displays. The customer buys 20. 4 lakhs in the pocket, 2 lakhs he pays to the adjacent shop, and 2 lakhs is his net profit. So at the end of the day, just by understanding the mind, if you would have spoken, what go down? Hamare paas to sari nahi hai. What would have happened? Okay, I'll go to the adjacent shop and buy the sari. That's the end of the day. So Peter Brewash at one point of time visited one hotel. And then, as soon as he entered the hotel, a ward boy basically comes to greet him. And then he says, what would you like, sir? How can I serve you? So then Peter Brewers mentions, I'll like a bottle of carrot juice. So, and then he checks in, keeps his baggage, goes for his meetings, conferences, and then comes back in the evening. And then he sees that there's a big jar of carrot juice kept there. 6 months later, again, he comes to the same hotel, checks in. Again, this same ward boy is supposed to serve him. He doesn't know who's serving him. He goes, checks in, keeps his baggage, goes out, comes back. And in the evening, he sees one big jar of carrot juice again placed on his table. He becomes very pleased. And he says, this hotel is going to really prosper. Why? Because you have people like this serving here. Of course, we have ample of examples in our guest department also about how when someone basically has a good tuning and good understanding with the person who's serving, that particular guest or Maharaj or Sannyasi or senior devotees, when they come, they definitely inquire, where is this Prabhu? I didn't see him. Why? Because once when you are serving, you try to understand the needs and requirements of the person who is actually meant to be served. They do not need to ask and they also feel happy. And they kind of, you know, you end up giving more service and kind of reciprocating. So it really pays to understand and kind of know what is the heart of the person you are serving, our superiors, our guru, and our spiritual master. Another thing which Arjuna did after this, he brings Ashwatthama to Draupadi. And then what is the reason for Arjuna bringing Ashwatthama to Draupadi? He had no business to bring Ashwatthama to Draupadi. But nevertheless, he kind of says, and then he's in his mind, Arjuna is clear and fixed. Jo Draupadi bolegi, main wo karunga. Maro bole to marungi, chodo bole to chod dungi. That's the end of the thing for Arjuna. So here we learn another kind of important lesson. Power of consulting. Whoever you may be the CEO of a top company, you may be a GBC, you may be a temple president, you may be a management leader, you may be a simple person. It doesn't kind of behoove or it doesn't belittle one to always hold on and say, wait, you come with a problem, can you hold on, I'll consult someone and come back to you. The person who's consulting might kind of say, I am your das, you are my boss. What's the need to consult? You gave me an instruction, you give me an order, I am here to follow you. But then, as we learn from this particular instance, there are so many instances in scriptures, even Krishna has consulted Uddhava. If consulting is a weak quality, then you know what we infer, even Krishna is a weak personality. So similarly, we see when Krishna goes to Sandipani Muni after his training is over in the Gurukul and he says, Gurudev, what Dakshina can I give you? Please let me know. What does Sandipani Muni say? Sandipani Muni says, wait a minute. I'll just ask your Guru Mata, my wife, and then I'll come back to you regarding what can you give as Guru Dakshina to me. So here also we see there are various instances in scriptures where basically there is no problem to kind of hold on, consult, ask someone, then take a decision. Even Srila Prabhupada the instructions that he received in 1922 when he actually joined the movement or when he met Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, preach the books and distribute books and preach this knowledge in the Western countries. 33 he got initiated, 44 maybe he published the magazine. But then it was not until 1965 that Prabhupada actually started working upon and fulfilling the mission of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So it's not that Prabhupada forgot the instructions of his spiritual master. So just a gestation period, all the while, Prabhupada had those instructions firmly etched in his heart, in his mind. It was only the perfect time that was separating. So similarly, Arjuna never said no to Krishna. He didn't say, no, I will not kill Ashwatthama. He just kind of bought time, took Ashwatthama to Draupadi, and then whatever Draupadi said, it followed whatever kind of, was in store for Ashwatthama. So in this case, in this particular temple, in this Vyasasan, there was a particular instance, 2004 or something, in a Sunday feast. Maharaj was quoting this example. So one fine day in 2004, Maharaj called for Srinath Ji Prabhu and he said, can you meet me? And then Srinath Ji Prabhu goes into Maharaj's room and then Maharaj kind of discusses about a very important project coming up or plan. And then the discussion was more about how do you feel, Shinarji Prabhu, should we go ahead with it? Are you okay to invest in this or so on and so forth? I mean, I don't know much details. But the essence of this was when Maharaj said, what do you feel about this? Can you give me your opinion about this? So what did Shinarji Prabhu say? He said, Maharaj, my wife is there in the temple hall. Can you give me 2 minutes? I will go and take her consultation and come back to you and then I will reply to you. So then Maharaj was so kind of impressed with this particular answer. In this very place, in this asana, Maharaj comes to the Sunday feast after the meeting. And then Maharaj, in front of the entire packed capacity, he says, do you know who Srinathji Prabhu? He is the owner of Seema Bulbs and Tubes and so many other businesses and industries. God knows how many he has. And then would any of you believe that Srinathji Prabhu is not capable to take a decision on his own? So how many of you believe, Swami? No one raises his hands, of course. Who wants to raise his hand? And then Maharaj narrates this instance that just a few minutes back I was having a meeting with Srinathji Prabhu and then Maharaj says, he was so pleased. Maharaj was so happy with this gesture of Srinathji Prabhu that he actually made him stand and actually gave a standing ovation and the entire devotees in the assembly, he made them kind of clap for Srinathji Prabhu for this particular act that he had exhibited that day. So basically consulting is not a weak quality. So we do not shy to consult. Now we'll come to the subject matter for what we're discussing. So there are many Dharma Shastras, Manusmritis. There are so many scriptures which kind of emphasize on this particular quality of forgiveness that we have chosen to discuss this particular day. From the Manusmriti, there is a shloka, Dhriti Shama Damosteyam, Saucham Indriya Nigraha, Veera Vidya Satyakramoda, Dashakam Dharma Lakshanam. So here, these are the 10 pillars of Dharma. And then, of course, there is self-control, Asteya is honesty, Saucha is cleanliness, Satya is truthfulness, and so on and so forth. Shama is also a very important limb. So wherever you see, Tulsi Ramayana, there is a verse which highlights about Shama. Then there is Bhagavatam, what comes to mind is 7th canto, 11th chapter, verses 8 to 12, basically about the 30 characteristics of Dharma. And there also, forgiveness plays a very important role. Bhagavad Gita 16.1, 2 and 3, I think in the third verse, last verse, there is Shama Dhamas. So that verse also focuses one of the qualities of when basically where Dharma is based. There is again forgiveness. So we see Padma Purana also, there is kind of quotation of forgiveness. So this forgiveness among the many other qualities plays a very important part in establishing Dharma in the society. So from the Niti also, Niti Shastras also support forgiveness or they kind of highlight the importance of forgiveness. So one shloka comes where it is kind of referred that a person who's kind of angry or I mean it is better said in Hindi, agar aapke paas krodh hai, to shatruo ki aapko koi avashyakta nahi hai. Agar aapke ird-gird biradari ke log hai, to aapko aag ki koi avashyakta nahi, aise hi aag lag jati hai. अगर आपके कोई मित्र है, if you have friends, then उत्तम औषधियों की क्या आवश्यकता है आपको? और आप दुर्जनों से घिरे हुए हो, तो फिर सर्पों की कोई आवश्यकता नहीं है. And then, if you have knowledge, आपके पास विद्या है, तो धन संपत्ति अर्जित करने की कोई जरूरत नहीं है. It will fall at your feet. Knowledge basically will attract wealth. And then, if you have shyness, then there is no other ornament that you need to worry to decorate yourself. And if you can compose a beautiful poem, what's the need for building palaces? You'll achieve that fame by living in that palace just by composing a beautiful poem. And if you possess forgiveness, the virtue of forgiveness, you actually do not need any armor to protect yourself. So this is from the Niti Shastra. So there are so many beautiful verses which kind of highlight and depict this particular quality or feature that we have decided to discuss today or chosen to kind of highlight forgiveness, which is one of the centrifugal themes of this chapter, The Son of Drona Punished. There are many other qualities which so many devotees have kind of narrated over the past few days. We've kind of chosen that we'll discuss something about this particular quality over the next few minutes. So Chaitanya Charan Prabhu in one of his lectures beautifully describes what is forgiveness about, what is forgiveness not about, And he distinguished between, he breaks up forgiveness between, what is forgiveness? Forgiveness, is it kind of trusting someone? If you forgive someone, does that mean you trust someone? No. He says forgiveness is different than trusting someone. For example, if someone kind of, you give some kind of property or money to a particular subordinate or a person and you say kind of handle it, and then that person somehow or the other mismanages that wealth. At the end of the day, when you come back, you forgive that particular devotee or you forgive that particular person you're working with. But does that mean you trust that person? No. Will you entrust more wealth in future to that person? Every one of us who's kind of sane and, you know, has their foot on the ground will always think twice before entrusting something where he has goofed up again to the person the same responsibility. So here we see forgiveness is different than trusting. So what happens when we are actually not able to forgive people? Why do we struggle? Because there is a dichotomy between the struggle and the dvandva between forgiving and trusting. So in that struggle between forgiving and trusting, we actually end up prolonging our misery by not being able to take the decision and plunge, and ultimately we become miserable. We hold on and on and on. So in the Bhagavatam, 10th canto, there is this instance which we all have kind of heard, and so many times this story comes. So this is Kamsa now driving Devaki on the chariot. Apni behen ko vida karta hai, but at the same time the Akashvani comes. And when the Akashvani comes, what does Kamsa do? He just freezes. And then before kind of time elapses, you see that famous picture which is there in the Bhagavatam. Kamsa picks up that particular sword, or what do they call it, and he's about to chop the head of Devaki when Vasudev comes in between, and then he kind of proposes something. He says, why do you want to kill her? What has the Akashvani said? All you need is the sons who are born. I promise you, I will hand over each and every son that is born to me, if we at all get that. And then why do you want to kill Devaki? Your problem is with our 8th son. I'll give you all my sons. You just leave Devaki. So at this particular time, Kamsa basically buys this logic of Vasudev. And then more or less, he's kind of a little bit repentant at this particular time. And he kind of, but in the same particular breath, something happens. His mind again gets spoiled. He imprisons Devaki and Vasudev. And then after that, what unfolds? The 8th son or 8th child is born. So when the 8th child is born, as promised, Vasudev takes the 8th child to Kamsa and hands it over to Kamsa. As promised, like a gentleman, he kind of, you know, sticks to his promise. So Kamsa takes the child, and we all know it's from pages of the Bhagavatam. And then before anything, it turns out to be a girl child. And then after some time, I mean, he realizes this is none other than Yogamaya or Durga Devi. And then what's the reaction of Kamsa immediately? Kamsa says, he starts kind of laughing. And he says, "Arey, ye to ghor kalyuga gaya. Even the gods have started speaking lies now. I mean, the 8th son of Devaki was supposed to kill me. Now this is a girl child. The Akashvani turns out to be false. What is this happening?" So then he immediately goes to Devaki and Vasudev, and he kind of says, "Please forgive me. I committed a great sin and blunder." But then he adds a caveat here. He says, but then actually whatever happens, happens. It's destined. Your sons were also destined to be killed. And it was so destined that I was the instrument, and because of this Akashvani, who turned out to be false, I committed that sin of killing your sons. But please forgive me. Vasudev and Devaki actually forgive Kamsa for the offense that he commits. But then now here, thus Vasudev immediately tell Kamsa, now that I have forgiven and Shyam ka bula lot ko ghar aa gaya, to usko bula nahi kehte. So what does Vasudev tell? He doesn't tell. You know what? Actually yesterday, na, there was an 8th son actually who was born to me, and I left him to Vrindavan and got Yashoda's daughter here. So he doesn't trust or repose trust in Kamsa. He forgives Kamsa. He may have forgiven Kamsa, but he didn't repose trust and faith in Kamsa. Why? Because of the previous activities. He actually saw that Kamsa's mind is fickle. At any given point of time, this guy has changed his opinion. Just like when the first son, Vasudev, took to Kamsa, at the same time he said, since the eighth son is going to kill me, and that is what the Akashvani was all about, I do not have any danger from this first son. So then, at that particular time, he actually, says, take him away. I have no danger from this. In a way, kind of. So basically, he forgives or he doesn't act upon what he says. But then, as we know, his council of ministers, Narad Muni, so many, the pastime unfolds. And then what we kind of witness is, not only he kills all the seven sons, so basically, how can you repose trust and faith in such a person? Even here, after the eighth child, Kamsa's atrocities do not stop there. He may be kind of seeking forgiveness at some point of time, at a fraction of a second. But the next hour, what was his mentality? Completely demoniac. What does he do? He basically, instructs Putana and all the other demons. First instruction is to Putana. Go in the entire adjoining areas of Brajadham and see any small child who is born and completely like kill each and every baby which is born in the surrounding areas. So this is kind of so brutal and so demoniac act that Kamsa has performed. It's like basically a mosquito enters our room and we blast the entire building. Something like that. So, basically what is the sum and substance of the entire kind of story is to highlight, forgiving is not same as trusting. When you forgive someone, that is for the past. And when you trust someone, that is for the future. You repose trust and faith, that means I am ready to basically again, whatever the consequences may be, I am ready to face whatever the consequences may be. This person might again turn and maybe again I might be royally kind of, suffering. But I am ready. But then actually what do Shastras say or what do they teach us? They teach us just like Vasudev, he kind of said wait and watch game. Vasudev played that wait and watch game in the sense he didn't kind of tell that Krishna is born and the son is kind of gone to Vrindavan. He waited and watched. Again, when Krishna came and he was about to kill Kamsa, he doesn't come and jump off the throne and says, beta, ye tumhara mama hai. And Devaki doesn't come and say, don't kill him. After all, he's our blood. So they forgive Kamsa at that particular point of time, but they do not stop Krishna from killing Kamsa. So that means the trust and faith factor is not reposed. So there, this pastime from the Bhagavatam beautifully depicts this particular distinction between forgiveness and trust. Of course, there is something like forgiveness and is different from forgetfulness also. They say forgive and forget. That's the sutra basically we use very commonly. Wherever you say forgive is followed by forget also. But then actually when you sit down and introspect and see what is forgiveness, what is forgetfulness, they both are not same. There is a world of difference in forgiving someone and there is a world of difference in forgetting about that activity. It is easier said than done. We don't have a program or a button placed in our kind of head. Delete, shift, delete, the instance is done. Aisa thodi hota hai. Kuch ghatna ghat jati hai, basically it takes time. So it's said that you may have a kind of a burn or a scar on your hand. So at that same time, you might forgive the person for who is responsible for this. But then in the initial time, when that scar is fresh and it's kind of burning all over, the very thought and the very picture of that scar will actually agitate you and you might kind of remember the person for which the wound has been caused. So it's not easy to kind of, you may forgive, but forgetfulness, it's very difficult. Again, over a period of time, that particular scar will heal with the period of time. And then once it's healed, maybe because the pain has reduced physically or an emotional platform and on a mental platform, you might be well placed now to basically kind of at least face the person, talk to him or whatever, whoever is responsible for that particular act. Now you might be in a much better position to interact or at least resume dialogue with him. So here it goes to show that, or even is forgetfulness good or bad? Of course it is relative, but then what happens if we actually forgive and forget just for the sake of it? You are actually placing yourself in a position where you could be abused again and again. And then what will happen is, you'll be miserable. At the end of the day, you'll kind of forget the task for which you have been coming here and practicing Krishna consciousness. Purpose will be defeated in kind of trying to follow certain rules. Again, forgiveness is different from condonement. What is condonement? You actually do not accept the fact. You are in denial mode that, nahin, usne kuch galat nahin kiya. Basically, you know, kuch hua nahin. Basically, for example, your hand is fractured. And you say, no, it's not his fault. My hand is not fractured only. But then if you don't realize and don't accept the fault, yes, there is some hurt which has been caused. There is some pain I am experiencing. There is something wrong. So basically, even accepting the fact is another step which helps you nicely forgive the person. Otherwise, whatever has been a small fracture will turn out to be a big disaster and kind of a health disorder in future. So forgiveness is different than trusting. Forgiveness is different than forgetfulness. Forgiveness is different than even condoning someone. So then we further see that when we discuss all these points, a question may arise. If forgiveness is such an important quality, if forgiveness is so kind of, you know, all the shastras describe forgiveness like this, is there any place for punishment in the scriptures or no? Are khali maaf karte rehne ka kya? Is there any place for justice or no? So, shastras also say, yes, along with forgiveness, justice also goes hand in hand. One hand, forgiveness, insaf ka tarazu, basically. One hand there is forgiveness and one hand there is justice. They actually have to go hand in hand. You cannot just go only one handful. What will happen? The others will completely collapse. Similarly, only punishment will lead to hard-heartedness. And only forgiveness will lead to pamper and spoil the entire whatever the purpose for which whoever or whatever is supposed to be kind of rectified. So, there has to be a balance struck between justice and punishment always. And there are always deterrents. What are deterrents? Like a nuclear bomb is compared to be a deterrent. It is said that countries, I mean India, after India or Pakistan or whoever the countries, they got nuclear bombs, or at least they kind of announced seemingly that we are a nuclear power. After that, 1999 we had the Kargil war. After that we did not have, after 1971 or something, there's been no actually frontal war. So why? This nuclear bombs actually at least act as a deterrent. Similarly, the morning register at 5 a.m. which is kept, maybe it acts as a deterrent, or seemingly the consequences of not following that register, maybe that might act as a deterrent in at least, oh, I have to wake up morning, there's the morning program, apart from actually purification. There's something which needs to be kind of there and kept in place. CCTV cameras which we see wherever we go to buildings nowadays and kind of, you know, corporate organizations, we see they actually paste on boards everywhere. What do they write? This building is under, this premises is under CCTV surveillance. So what is the purpose for that particular label or board which is displayed? It actually acts as a deterrent to prevent someone who might be having plans or who may be making plans to conduct some activity there. So basically deterrent is also kind of, you know, another small level of justice or punishment. And then what does punishment do? Justice or punishment, it creates harmony and balance in the society. It kind of, you know, actually when someone gives justice or punishment, the catch here is it has to be transformative. Whenever you kind of want to forgive, you forgive, there is no problem. But then when you want to accord justice, we need to kind of analyze and take case-to-case situation. You can't be kind of, you know, everything can't be same for everyone. So at least you need to evaluate circumstances and situations and see what will we do to basically bring about a little transformation or change in the behavior of the person or people or kind of particular group who some kind of act is warranted against. So even, definitely Ashwatthama, wherever he is today, there might be kind of so much transformation that would have taken place in him. We don't know where is Ashwatthama, but surely because of the act of Krishna, Arjuna and the Pandavas, wherever Ashwatthama is, there would be complete transformation in his consciousness today. What is the Mumbai police? You know, the Mumbai police, I kind of searched for a picture on the net. It is interesting that the emblem of Mumbai police signifies two things, Sadarakshanaya and Khala Nigranaya. So Sadarakshanaya exemplifies protecting and kind of being there for the good welfare of the good followers, the good citizens. The police is for protecting them. And Khala Nigranaya means you actually eliminate and abolish the criminal mentality of people. So basically, it's very apt here, I thought. You know, the balance between justice and forgiveness, you apply in such a way that you subdue the criminal mind and mentality by according proper justice, apt justice to transform the criminal mind, and also you actually give forgiveness and you are accommodating to actually protect those who are good law-abiding citizens or actually following the rules and regulations. So, one more thing which it does, what does punishment or justice when it is accorded? It reposes faith and belief in the leadership, and it reposes kind of, you know, that brings about a faith in the praja or the subjects that yes, it's not just one-way traffic here. There is something when you kind of do not follow the norms of the social order, something, someone is there, the government acts, the leaders kind of take responsibility. There is some kind of, for the miscreants or people who do not abide by the laws, there is, the laws of nature have kept something which is kind of, you could say, preventing them. So, in this regard, when we see this entire section that we are studying, it's all about Draupadi. So Draupadi basically forgives Ashwatthama. So here we're discussing this quality. And also, again, there is another aspect to this where we see Draupadi, I mean, sometimes, you know, reading the purports and reading the verses may somehow or the other, if we are not intelligent enough, if we get stuck up with the, you could say, letter of the, you know, word and not the spirit of the word, it's very easy to get carried away and say, okay, Draupadi is kind of, you know, soft-hearted, Draupadi is weak-hearted, she's non-intelligent, she doesn't know how to take decisions, and she kind of cannot properly discriminate or is weak-hearted. So then, let us kind of just take some time, and through the example of Draupadi, sometimes this mistake is committed by people or devotees who study Shastras, and they kind of are not mature enough to understand the what the acharyas actually imply by what they write at certain circumstances. So, when it is kind of said that Draupadi is weak-hearted, it doesn't mean that actually woman as a whole or Draupadi herself is actually weak-hearted. If it is so, then let us study who Draupadi is. How many names of Draupadi actually has got? It is not like, you know, we say Papu, Bablu, and, you know, pet names that we give in our houses to people and small children. Draupadi has not got her names like that. There is particular reasons for each of the names that Draupadi has kind of acquired. So first one, she gets the name Panchali. Why does she kind of get the name as Panchali? Because she hails from the province of Panchal. What is Panchal? The kingdom of Drupad, one of the most powerful kings. And Arjuna or the Pandavas, as Kshatriyas they are, they do not kind of go and, you know, attend the Swayambhur of Tom, Dick and Harry. Basically, barabari ke log hote, to tabhi jaake rishta hota hai. So that was prevalent at that time. So Draupadi was from such a powerful dynasty, the Panchal dynasty. Again, another name she derived because of her connection with her grandfather, Prishata, is Parshati that she derived. Another name that Draupadi derived is, she was called as Ayonija. Now, what is Ayonija? Ayonija is something that one who is not born from the womb of a woman. So, we all know where Draupadi was born from. She was born, she appeared from fire. So, again, that gave her another name, that is Yajna Saini. So, this is another name. So, all these names, they actually have significance where Draupadi kind of gets this. There is another name that Draupadi is also referred to as Krishna. Why? Because she is fiery-eyed, coppery skinned and black long hair. This is what the scriptures say. She got this name of Krishna karke. And then she is the only female friend who enjoyed the female rasa or sakya rasa with Krishna. This is also another point that I got from this description. And then it is also said blue lotus flowers. I mean, I have not seen blue lotus flowers. But the body of Draupadi emanated the fragrance of blue lotus flowers for 2 miles. In the radius of wherever Draupadi was. So that gave her the name Yojana Gandha. So this goes to show, I mean, just simply by analyzing the names of Draupadi, and every name that is accorded to Draupadi has a particular significance, has a reason behind it. And she's not an ordinary woman. She used to feed thousands of brahmacharis daily before actually she had her food. She actually was an expert administrator. The entire palace of Hastinapur was aptly administered and managed by Draupadi. Moreover, this, there is an instance in the Mahabharata which describes that the queens of Dwarka, Krishna, they come to meet the Pandavas when they are in the forest. And then there somewhat takes place between Draupadi and Satyabhama and the other queens, where they actually inquire and try to learn from Draupadi the secret of how she has managed to please 5 husbands. So they also want to know, how can I please my one husband Krishna? So this is some of the beautiful qualities and powerful qualities that Draupadi exhibits. And it goes to show that just by kind of sometimes, you know, analyzing, there is a purpose for which some statements have been made. But then if we take it to another extreme, you might be kind of causing fatal kind of problems for your relationships or your particular family. If you misinterpret and you are not mature enough to understand what the Shastras actually meant to exemplify and what they actually say. So always there has to be a balance in certain things where we need to apply justice and punishment. Also, to show that what is the power and beauty and worth of woman, there is this shloka which says, Karyeshu Dasi, Karaneshu Mantri, Bhojyeshu Mata, Shayaneshu Rambha, Rupeshu Lakshmi, Shamaya Dhatri, Satkarma Nari, Kuladharma Patni. This is the glory. This shloka basically glorifies the power of a woman. What all activities? As Gauram Prabhu always says, finance ministry, education ministry, and home ministry, all these 3 important portfolios are handled by none other than woman. So similarly, we see here the kitchen industry also, basically, Bhojyeshu Mata is there. Then Shamaya Dhatri, I mean, a woman is supposed to be emotional. So that is not a weak quality. Of course, we can say that's a weak quality, but many times our weakness also comes and becomes a strength. And our strength can become our biggest weakness if we are not alert and we become overconfident. So basically, for a single kind of father, it is impossible or very difficult to raise a child. But the emotional strength that a woman carries gives her that strength to raise a child. We say women are emotional, but that emotions becomes the strength of a woman. So that which is portrayed in some section as a weakness is also portrayed and elaborated and glorified by acharyas in other sections. So definitely, I mean, there is no comparisons. They are like chalk and cheese or like rice and dal. Something similarly like justice and punishment. So coming back to this theme, I'll kind of conclude with this particular example. From the Mahabharata we see, and this particular instance in Bhagavatam, Draupadi has lost 5 sons. We know what is the pain of a mother to lose 1 son, 2 sons. I mean, you can't forget. For losing 1 son, the rest of the life, the mother and father are basically immersed in the thought of their child. Whatever objects are there in their house, whatever even deities are there in their house, everything will remind them of their children. It cannot be erased till they actually leave the body. So the pain of losing one's child is enormous, beyond words to describe what actually parents undergo. Now this is what Draupadi has undergone here, and she has seemingly forgiven Ashwatthama. Now this same Draupadi, kind of you analyze now, take her, what happened? She was disrobed in the kingdom of Hastinapur. And then what happened? Did she forgive Duryodhan, Dushasan and the Kurus? No. To our surprise, when we'll see that same Draupadi, you could say she was, I mean, sometimes people say that she was the cause for the entire Mahabharata, and due to the, you could say, when the chaste woman was insulted, that kind of brought about the downfall of an entire empire. So Draupadi actually had that, you know, feeling that no, they have to be punished for this crime that they have committed. But then you compare the 2 circumstances from a layman point of view or from a mundane point of view. Thoda insult kar diya, wo jyada dukhdai hai ki mere bachche mar gaye, wo dukhdai hai. No. I mean, we might reason to say, no, this is much bigger pain. But no, we have to analyze this circumstance from another point of view, from the point of view of dharma. So here it is said, who was she? She was a Kshatriya lady. So for a Kshatriya, we know dishonor is worse than basically death. So here, what had happened in that Asat Sabha, Draupadi was disrobed. And basically that is the biggest disrepute you can ever cause to any woman. And moreover, her husbands were seemingly insulted in that Asat Sabha. So that is also another great kind of, you know, this insult caused to Draupadi. So these are two instances what happened. And after that, we see that basically in that assembly, when this thing happens, further when we analyze who did this act, what were the circumstances in which that act was performed, and then what is the consequence or what is the power that this person has to cause in future, what does he have? So when we analyze Ashwatthama's position here, by the time Ashwatthama was brought before Draupadi, he had already been bound like a pashu. Because he misused his power and weapons, he was actually bereft of any kind of power or spiritual weapons that he had. Ashwatthama was rendered powerless, and then because of the intelligence of Arjuna, in listening to the instruction of Krishna and decoding and understanding his mind, Arjuna cut off his jewel, thereby pleasing one section of the Pandavas and pleasing Bhima also. That completely annihilated any semblance of power that Ashwatthama had, and he was rendered impotent to basically cause any more havoc or injustice in future to the society. But now come to Duryodhan and Dushasan and the Kurus. What is the situation here? They were the rulers. They were the people. Satta mein baithe, they were the people in power. They could do anything which was there. They were the emperors or the king of the state. Not only did they have power, but they had the atrocities or they had the audacity to actually cause insult to a woman, and that too not an ordinary woman, another princess of equal, if not greater in strength or in basically capacity and position to them. And also insult co-kings like the Pandavas who were also their family members. So what does this show? When rulers become audacious and atrocious and they are brutal in their kind of behavior, it sets the platform. And if such people are forgiven, the future is really bleak and this might call upon havoc and ruination for the subjects and society. So these are all the reasons. And of course, apart from that, Bhagavatam says, Dharmyam, Nyayam, Nirvilikam, Karunyam, and Draupadi gives six reasons, Samam and Mahat. So all these things, you know, when you actually weave it to the thread and the reasons given by Draupadi to forgive Ashwatthama, we see that how Draupadi has kind of actually balanced very nicely the kind of, you know, scale of justice and punishment or forgiveness and justice very aptly. And by this example of Draupadi, we can pray to Prabhupada and Gurudev that we kind of derive some intelligence from the life of Draupadi, from the life of our Acharya's Guru, and seemingly try to practice and apply this in our spiritual life. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada Ki.
Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Hare Krishna.